We're joined on the phone by Marjorie Fisher, Bureau Chief for Special Victims, who investigates child abuse cases. Can you begin by explaining the findings of your investigation?
Sure. Back last summer, in July, a foster child named Stephanie Ramos was taken by her foster mother, Renee Johnson, to Manhattan, to the foster care agency with the two other foster children that resided in the home for a visit. And at that time, the foster mother took Stephanie Ramos, at that time 9 years old, a severely disabled foster child, and dumped her in a garbage can in Manhattan. She wasn't a baby, she was nine, but she was pretty much the size of a baby, was a severely disabled child, and she was dead at that time. And the baby was found in a Bronx garbage dump. Due to the fact that the child resided in Queens County, we became involved. We became involved when the police went to the home to pick up some clothing of Stephanie's, because originally Stephanie's mother, foster mother, had said that the child had been taken from the foster care agency and she didn't know where she was. So they went to the home to get some clothing to have some canine investigation, you know, for the dogs to smell the clothing. And at that point, when they got to the home, they found a completely garbage-strewn home, you know, filled with overflowing a refrigerator that was overflowing and spoiled and outdated food, garbage everywhere in the bedrooms and the living room. And the first floor of the home where the kids did not reside was literally hip-deep in garbage. We became involved to determine whether any of this troubling discovery of this devastating home environment had anything to do with Stephanie's death. And we began a homicide investigation. Very quickly, the medical examiner determined that this child had died of natural causes from two serious, pre-existing, devastating medical conditions. And so at that point, we decided to investigate to determine whether the foster care system should have provided better supervision to determine and watch the child's living conditions, the children's living conditions. And so we began an investigation that was very, very comprehensive to determine whether these conditions had anything to do with her death. And as a result of that, we realized that her foster mother had become completely overwhelmed caring for four medically needy foster children, and that she had sunk into an apparent mental breakdown, which really impaired her judgment and completely impaired her ability to function. At that point, we decided to try and come up with some recommendations to ACS, which is the Administration for Children's Services, to consider in their supervision of foster care agencies that provide 95% of the foster care for children in New York City. And we came up with a series of recommendations.
Can you list some of the highlights of those recommendations?
Yes, of course. First of all, based upon the way this child was disposed in a garbage can, having been well cared for several years, and second, when we observed the devastating condition of this home, we realized that a real psychiatric breakdown had taken place here that was unseen by any of the many foster care workers that were involved with these children's care. When a home is recertified, which was happening in this home right around then, a follow-up psychological screening should occur just to determine whether there's been any deterioration as a result of the stress of foster care. Here in this house, the stress of the foster care was really through the roof. Having a single mother, she was a registered nurse, but you know, still to care for four really, you know, needy, very needy children, three of them medically needy children who had devastating disabilities, one could expect that there might be some kind of deterioration, and there is no screening process in place. The second thing that we thought would be extremely beneficial and might have really solved this before this terrible incident happened is we recommended a series of unannounced home visits for foster care parents where the agency workers, social workers, nurses, whoever it is that visits the home, comes at least a few times a year on an unannounced basis. In this case, this foster mother was able to straighten up and get things together before the visits occurred, and therefore the workers did not see what was obviously happening here. So that's something we think is critical. In order to see what's happening with foster children, you really need to see how they're functioning in the home and how the foster parent is functioning, especially in a home which is designated as a medically needy home. So those are two recommendations.
You had a response from ACS on these recommendations yet?
There was a response from ACS. They are studying the recommendations. They endorse many of them. And one of them is that we recommended increased funding for foster care programs and, for the advertising of the foster care program so we can get more foster parents. So one foster parent would not end up having so many medically fragile kids in her home. But that was about it. I think that they are considering the recommendations. And the rest of the recommendations are really an enforcement of the limits on the number of medically fragile kids that can be in a foster home. Yeah, ACS has a limit of two. There were three medically needy children in this home, plus an additional child with some disabilities. We recommended mandatory respite, which means that a foster parent would have to take a certain amount of time off a year, a little vacation, something, so that they have some time away from this very difficult job. I mean, after all, anybody who has children knows that it's a difficult job to raise children. This woman was raising four children with a range of disabilities on her own. We have recommended mandatory nursing home services in medically needy children's homes and more frequent home visits for children who are medically needy. Believe it or not, the requirements for home visits are the same in a house where foster children are completely fine and normal and have no disabilities, and a home like this where the children are incredibly needy. So those are some of our recommendations, and we hope that maybe something positive will come out of this tragedy if some of these recommendations are adopted by ACS and by the legislature in terms of providing increased funding for these very, very important people in our city.
Mm-hmm. What was Stephanie's situation with her biological parents?
Their parental rights had been terminated a long time ago. Stephanie was nine, and so at that, at this point, there was no reunification going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just being cared for. She had been in one home for a while, and now she was in another.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for speaking with us. Marjorie Fisher is the Bureau Chief for Special Victims at the Queens District Attorney's Office. Do you want to add any last comments about the general findings and recommendations?
Well, our goal was to determine whether the foster care system was doing its job in this case. And finally, I would just like to say that although there are some wonderful people, in the foster care system trying hard against very challenging circumstances to provide support for foster parents, in this case, we believe that there were serious flaws in that supervision, and we hope that these recommendations will make a difference and make the workers who supervise these homes a little bit more careful in terms of viewing what's really going on, not only with the children, but with the foster parents who are caring for these children.
Well, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're joined now on the phone by E.P. Jones of In the Spirit of the Children. The group supports youth exiting the foster care system and their families. Welcome.
Hi. Good evening.
Well, Marjorie Fisher from the Queens District Attorney's Office pointed to the need for more support going to foster parents caring for medically fragile children like Stephanie Ramos. What would your recommendations be for resource allocation or augmentation to the Administration for Children's Services?
Well, first and foremost, I certainly would have to agree with some of the recommendations that have been made, and particularly that of the screening, psychological screening of foster parents, and again, having the caseworkers make unannounced home visits. That's really been my stance for quite some time, particularly regarding unannounced home visits. I think what happens when the visits are scheduled, people, that of the caregivers in this instance, tend to stage their presence. They're aware of the caseworkers making a visit, so they can be more scripted upon arrival. And I think when you make unannounced home visits, or if they can certainly implement such, I think people will be able to catch more of the issues and or concerns that go on behind the scenes.
Your group does a lot of work to support families after youth exit the foster care system. What about the other half of this equation, the biological parents and resources for family reunification?
At this time, and I guess I need to make clarity, currently in the spirit of the Children's Services, youth who have exited the foster care system, in order to provide them with assistance to avert them from becoming homeless upon discharge. We have not yet launched the Family Empowerment Program, which is what I think you're referencing, which would certainly work with families who have been reunited with their children out of care to provide supportive services to them so that the children don't wind up back in the system. And the reason being is I have noted for years that a number of the children, and particularly if they've been in care for a long period of time, when returned to parent, there's a whole adjustment piece that takes place or should take place that's not really being met at this current time. And thus it causes a number of children to wind up in back in the system within, I'd say on average, anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Now, in terms of resource allocation within ACS for family reunification and support for that versus, say, the new programs around teen adoption, what's your take on that?
I think that if the system in itself, in terms of the powers that be, state legislators and even the federal government for that matter, if they could find a means in which to certainly allocate or appropriate funding to support the biological parent, even during reunification or prior to, even in the preventive measures, I think it would be money better spent.
Now, do you see the reunification happening in a way that makes sense? You yourself were in the foster care system, and the critique of the foster care system, for instance, 30 years ago, was that it predominantly took children away from poor families. What's your response to that, and how do you compare what you know about conditions now compared to when you were in foster care?
Okay, there have been certain changes that certainly have taken place in the last 30 years I guess you would have to say, to enhance service delivery to children and families that find themselves affiliated with the system. But I, overall, in truth, I don't know that there, even with all of the monies that have been appropriated and the enhancing services, I can't say, if I was to make a comparative note between then and now, that much has actually changed. I don't see where there has been a large change in how things are done. I mean, other than a number of other regulations and new standards, I still think a number of the children and families affected by, should we say, child removals are still poor families.
and 3% of foster children in New York City are white. The rest are children of color.
Color, right. That's correct.
So do you, just to wrap up, do you have a sense of if and how welfare reform in New York has affected families working towards reunification or possibly affected by the foster care system?
Okay, welfare reform in and of itself, how it's affected, well, true and all, I believe when welfare reform was first enacted, it was certainly going to have an impact on the number of children coming into camp, particularly that of the adolescent population, and more specifically, that of teen mothers. Because of the Personal Responsibility Act, it has certainly increased the number of youngsters coming into the system with children. Who are considered emancipated minors at that stage, coming into care.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, if there has been a direct impact in terms of that particular segment of the targeted population, yes. And I think it also feeds into the, not just from the standpoint of welfare reform, but even the implementation of ASFA has also fed. Has been fed certainly by that of the teen mom population or youngsters who have found themselves becoming young mothers while in care.
Mm-hmm.
Because when these young women are in care, whether they're in a group home facility or that of a foster boarding environment, their children automatically, I shouldn't say automatically, but can very much so find themselves having their own infants removed and placed into care.
Okay, well, E.P. Jones, we hope to speak with you more in the future. Thanks for joining us. If people want more information about In the Spirit of the Children, they can visit spiritofthechildren.org, right?
Right.
That's where you can get more info. Thanks for speaking with us.
And I thank you. Bye-bye.